Welcome, everybody. The regular board meeting for the Board of Education will come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to
the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, Mrs. Stecker, please call the roll. Steve is. Yes, do it first.
Motion.
Either way,
one second.
Do it first. Or?
Do a call afterwards. Do you want to go ahead and why don't we start with?
Well, I guess it doesn't matter because he's not going to join today.
Right.
Okay.
Should we go to the closed session and discuss this?
No.
Roll call. Mr. Kenwood.
Here.
Mr. Gondrak. Mr. Smith.
Here.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes, here.
Mr. Black. Mr. Ellis.
Here.
Mrs. Nelson.
Here. Thank you. Is there anyone here who would like to address the board at this time from our public? Hearing none.
Can we do the electronic participation before
sure.
we do
you
that?
Want to do this
yeah.
now? Okay. Board member Steve Vondrak is not able to attend the meeting in person due to employment-related obligation. In accordance with District 41 policy, Mr. Vondrak notified the superintendent's office that he would not be physically present for the board meeting, but would like to participate in the meeting by phone. May I have a motion to approve Mr. Vondrak's participation in tonight's meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Roll call.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
And we will contact Mr. Vondrak later in the meeting when he is available closer to 8:30.
Okay.
So for recognition this evening, this is a very special night for us, and we want to say thank you to all of you who are able to attend. And just as a point of fact for the board, this year we hired 16 new support staff, 9 new teachers, and 2 new administrators. And we're so glad that so many of you were able to attend this evening. And Board President Erica Nelson is going to ask you to stand when she reads your name.
Yes, I know everybody loves this part when we ask you to stand and stay standing. So you'll feel better by the time we get to the end of the list. There'll be more with you. But I want to thank everybody for coming, first of all. And I think this is one of the nights that we really enjoy. It has a chance to get some one-to-one time with some of our newer staff and teachers and administrators, and we welcome you here tonight. We're thrilled to have you as a part of the district, and are excited for a great year, which it sounds like from talking to everybody, it's already started as a great year. So I'm going to go ahead and read the entire list, in part because I think it's changed, and maybe some of you are here that said you might not come, so I don't want to miss anybody. So from Lincoln, if you could stand when I call your name, we have Catherine Del Budice. She's in our food service department. Marnie Favis, also in our food service department. Tricia Gowry, fourth grade, correct?
Yes.
Welcome. Ryan Ignacio, third grade teacher. April Mack. But please say it because it's a beautiful name. Makatagay, who is our art teacher. Michael Murphy in our computer lab. And Judy Smith with our food service department. Welcome. From Churchill, we have Kristen Bustos, bilingual, and ENL, welcome. Hilda Esparza, bilingual liaison. Vasilke Kolche, who is our custodian with Churchill. Ana Linda Lara Lagunes, our Spanish instructional aide. And I just have to tell you, I had a chance to talk with Ana Linda. This is her first day tomorrow, just brand new. It's perfect. Harriet Morrison with our food service department and has invited me to go and eat at Churchill, which I'm going to do. Louis Medrano is tech support for Churchill and Forest Glen, and Tina Rhoda for food service. Welcome. Forest Glen, I'm not sure anyone was able to come for Forest Glen, but we have Denise Bailey in our food service department, Sandra Osborne, a special ed aide, Rudy Hsu, our Forest Glen CSO custodian, Amy Seacrest, Food Service, and Deborah Wetter, Food Service as well. So
Rudy is here somewhere.
Yeah, Rudy's working, I think. From Franklin, we have two, Jennifer Donovan and Kristen Slezak, both in our Food Service Department. We welcome them. And then from Hadley, we have Bridget Adkins, math teacher, 6th and 7th grade, correct? Okay. Ann Berg, math teacher, 6th grade?
Just 6th grade.
Okay. Alyssa Gray, special ed and GIP, and this is Alyssa's first year teaching.
Yeah.
And she succeeds her sister, who was in that position last year.
Kenneth Kozen, who's the student services coordinator, and Samantha Lawrence. Band. And what number did you give me that's involved with band? Now, how many students?
242.
242 students in band.
That's great.
Unbelievable. So we welcome Heather. And from our central services office, we have Dave Scarmardo, Director of Building and Grounds. Also here is Linda Schweikoffer. Linda, are you here? Our principal at Lincoln. And Jeff Burke, who is assistant principal at Lincoln and Forest and Ben Franklin. Yes, who is waiting for his wife to tell him that she's ready to deliver their baby.
I'm not that ready, so yeah.
So thank you, everybody.
We are going to move on to our presentation for this evening, and I know that you all would love to stay for the full board meeting, but I do want to give you an opportunity to leave and get to the work that you do in your homes or that you do needing to do to get ready for tomorrow. So if you would like to stay, we welcome you and would love to have you stay. We'll be doing our student achievement report next, but if you have need to leave in order to get prepared for your day tomorrow, please do not hesitate to stand up and leave, and we won't interpret that in any other way than
Welcome to our smaller yet still important group. Presentations, reports, and initiatives.
This evening we're going to give you our annual achievement report update, and Karen will probably run through some aspects of the report more quickly than others simply because you've seen this so often and know everything you need to know about No Child Left Behind. We have added one new item this year, and that is the tracking on our Fountas and Pinnell data, which is our reading assessment we do in both our elementary and junior high. So, Karen, it's your show.
Just to start out, as of right now, we're still being held to the 100% of our students meeting standards by 2014, even though that 2014-15 will be the release of that new test. And that just highlights a few of those four subgroups that the data is often disaggregated into as well. Just as a reminder, a subgroup consists of 45 or more students, and kids can be part of more than one subgroup. And of those three factors highlighted on the bottom, that's what Illinois continues to use in calculating their AIP. You'll notice that in 2012, the target was 85%, but you will also see that that was changed by IFPE in August. It was supposed to be 92.5%. As it is next year, it was going to be 2 years in a row, and the band made that change to the 85% for this year. And that's what they calculated at AYP again. So again, we'll cover ISAT and math. And then we did include some Fountas and Pinnell, and I'll go over that when we get to that particular slide. So here are the very familiar different types of data reports. And so with this first one, it shows you the percentage of students within each performance level, and that it is separated by meets and exceeds, and then that column. We continue to be above the state scores in that. One thing I thought I would mention, too, is that I know in the past, IGET's not always been our favorite test to use to kind of gauge our progress in that, but we felt we're still being held to those to meeting on that particular test in the public format. It would be important that we go ahead and continue to share that. So, again, this just shows you the last 3 years by grade level in those performance levels, and probably the most informative slide around the data is when you start to look at it by cohort, because this is grade level specific. And on the next slide, you'll see, again, this continues to be grade level for past 4 years. But again, it's just that particular grade level. The next slide will have it, will be performance. But you can kind of continue to see, I would say, that little bit of up and down. In the past, we've talked about what would be the number of points that would be significant. You know, we kind of think of it sometimes greater than 5, but you'll even see kind of on the next slide with cohorts, they kind of bounce back up. So I think any time within that is probably within the normal range. I would still classify it as the data being relatively stable, or even use the word flat. I mean, it kind of pretty much stays the same from year to year. And if you remember, too, when we had the presentation, when we looked at our data a little bit differently, the cut scores are changed, so sometimes it's kind of hard to really look at it from this perspective. We won't go there right now, but just kind of tuck that in the back of your mind. So the next slide shows the cohort data. So again, this is where, for example, if you look at our current ninth graders along the left-hand column, at one point, you know, they dip from 90 to 87, you know, so we would have kind of looked at that, but then they're back up again to 94% of them. And again, we're just looking at reading right now. Our current seventh graders, again, so you still see that fluctuation. They have dipped and they're back up again. So it's still kind of hard to say, you know, this is the number that we would tend to watch for. But I think it's important at the building level, too, to watch your cohort groups over time.
I think one of the things, too, you notice in that cohort work is that something that was found in the benchmark study, too, is that our students do better over time.
And when you see the subgroup data around that, for some of our subgroups, in particular our ELL group, if they're still receiving those services as a junior high, they're obviously new to us, and possibly new to the country, so which is why you can see those dips. But generally speaking, they do better over time. So the next slide, that red bar was the target for this year, and then the green bar shows, as we know today, what the target for students to be meeting next year, or this spring, actually. What this is showing you, too, is when we talk about subgroup, usually we think of 45, but Nancy goes in and just pulls all of our kids. So we may not have 45 black kids at 8th grade, but for those kids who were in it. So your subgroup, total number of students varies a little bit here. If you look at our LEP kids, particularly at 4th and 5th grade, Katie and I were just talking about this a little bit too. That is a very typical dip that you will notice because of the increase in academic language. And we know that test will have a lot of academic language. So you'll see that dip and then start to see it kind of pick up again. But then what also comes into play here is at 7th and 8th, kids who are still identified as LEP, their scores warrant those services, they tend to be either newer to the country or newer to the district. And historically, we've seen, you know, a couple of schools that they have attended, so there's that influence as well. Important to note that our curriculum for our ELL students was revised last year, and we looked at it again this year. just to make sure that we're supporting it and really emphasizing that our kids are part of the Common Core, the general ed curriculum experience at Legend Council. That first best instruction is what we want them to have, and then that additional support. The other thing I think that's sometimes hard to wrap our heads around, it, and even for our teachers with our LEP kids, is the services they're getting is to build their acquisition of the English language. And when you think about that, if you were to go to another country, you may have been fully schooled here, but within a year, you're taking a test at grade level, and you may not have that academic language yet, and, which is why we see some of the dip there.
So Karen, the test is not altered in any way for any of the subjects?
They have a modified language version, which is Spanish on one side and it's supposed to be like simplified. Once you choose that, you can't give any other accommodation, and so the teachers kind of have to make a choice. Do I want to give them the accommodations, like smaller group setting, extended time? But once you choose the linguistically modified version, you can't apply some of those other modifications. So we try to kind of look at what their language levels are. Our kids are given a pass in reading for 1 year, but after a year, they take that test, really not modified significantly, I would say. And then those scores are part of our data.
It's a really good question. Was it the image test that used to be used?
Mm-hmm. Access.
Okay. Well, it used to be an image.
Right.
And then
totally separate test.
And that was
correct.
Taken away.
And we saw really good growth on our access scores that our kids take once a year. So we're seeing the kids make the progress in the areas of reading, writing, listening, and speaking and acquiring the English language. But it's going to take a while for it to really transfer to a grade level. So here we've got our math scores. Again, it shows you the last 3 years, and it's broken down by the performance level. And then down below them, you will see the science as well. Our ELL kids are not given a pass in taking the math and science test. They do take it their first year. And it's not supposed to count for just that first year, but they do have to take the test too, which causes additional angst in math. But, if you look up at third grade there in the XCs, that was supposed to know we continued with our third graders. They have a high number of XCs up there at the very top. Fourth grade still kind of hangs in there. You know, it starts to shift a little bit. But overall, Mike, you can kind of go to the next slide there too. Just looking at it from a different representation. Again, these are not cohorts. It's that group of kids. But our math scores are higher overall than our literacy scores. Again, pretty stable over time. Or flat, if you like that word better. And then the next slide shows you the cohort data.
Karen, that's been pretty good. I mean, we've had consistently high math scores
mm-hmm.
over the years.
And even with a new curriculum implementation years ago, we maintain that. Mm-hmm. We can see mm-hmm. kind of that big dip that sometimes teachers will see. So, again, that 1 or 2 point variance you see, so pretty, like I said, pretty stable. And then I think the next slide. So here's science first. And again, what we're concerned about is, and it also, the state has seen it too, that our science scores are going down slightly, probably more at fourth grade than they are at seventh grade. But I know our junior high teachers would tell you that they're concerned. And hopefully, and this is one of the things that the think tank is really addressing. We've taken the social studies curriculum and tried to embed it in that literacy curriculum. It happens naturally in K1 and 2, but 3rd through 8th, or 3rd through 5th, with the social studies being integrated, to give more of that block of time devoted specifically to science, but wanting that whole area of STEM to be a big focus of what we're doing. And this is one of the reasons. We're not alone. I mean, I think it's a natural result of AYP and heavy emphasis on reading and math. But we're aware of it, and we're concerned about it, and we don't want to see it to continue to decline, which is why we are really looking at that. So here's your subgroup performance in math, and you can see where the bar is there. Again, there may not be 45 kids, but we're a lot closer to, we had some groups that hit, that are already hit next year's target, but far more than are closer to the 85% of this year, some approaching. And you will see your LAP kids will do better in math, a little bit more in language there. Okay, now we're going to shift to math. With the math test, when you look, this is reading, and it's going to be fall to spring. And there's a couple of important things to note is that this past year they released the new norms study. Mm-hmm. And so we were encouraged to go back in and recalculate your scores from the last 2 years applying those new norms. So we did do that, and it is reflected here. But one of the things that we noticed, and I heard from some of the different buildings, is that they reestablished growth targets last year. And in the past, growth targets were, we saw far more individuality. If your math risk score was at the high end, you may have only had like a growth target of 1 or 2 points. For kids who had lower risk scores, they had a significantly higher, sometimes 12, 15 points. What NWA did last year with their growth targets is they kind of came in more of a standard. You're supposed to grow about a year's equivalent of RIT points. So some teachers saw like their entire class needed to grow 12 points. And that, you know, that threw a lot of people. And it was kind of the shift as a result of that norm study. So as a result, I think it's a factor in why we saw kind of our growth targets go down, is because now you had kids who were already kind of at the top there, and from an instructional perspective, they may not be getting a full curriculum that's going to get them to that next level, because they're kind of struggling to 2+ years ahead of grade level, and how does that look? So that I think was a factor. And then when you look at spring to spring, to me it's even more when you kind of got that longer time frame. So unfortunately, what I guess I would feel like it's not really trend data as much, because we've got the new norms. And then I will tell you too, is they've now released new Common Core questions this year. So you're going to see another change. We don't know what that will translate to. Some of the schools just started, there's even a little 10-minute test to expose the kids to, called the familiarization test this year, to show them, kind of demonstrate the new types of questions, things like drag and drop, that they've never had to do on the computer before. They've probably done it, I would say, through video games and some of that. And for those kids who have been on Odyssey, they've had some of those types of questions, so hopefully our kids will be more familiar with it. But so we're kind of, I still have a lot of faith in NWA, but I feel like our trend data will look slightly different kind of over those next.
Can you just, I want to make sure I understand how to read this graph. Should it be that in first or second grade there, 60% of the kids met their growth target?
Yes.
And then?
67.
Do what?
Which one are you looking at?
I'm looking at second grade, 2009-10, the one all the way on the left. So 60% met their growth target in reading.
Mm-hmm. 60.1 in 2009 to
2010. And then
is this the one you're looking at, John?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the
second graders,
right?
2000. 9, 10, 60% met their growth target.
Correct.
And then, do I assume that we have a downward trend in meeting targets in reading at this point?
No.
No.
I don't think we can say that yet because this
because
is where...
Because of the conversion of the data?
The growth targets changed with this particular year.
And does, I mean, it seems like overall, though, the percentage of meeting growth is significantly lower than the previous way they measured.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Is that, did the standards go up? How do you, what do we think the reason for that is?
Well, I think it has more to do with the change in the growth target. Typically, if a child was performing significantly high on their RIP scores, they might have only been expected to grow a point or two in the past. And a lot of kids could have done that. This year, they may be needing to grow, like, 10 points, and they were already kind of hovering around, like, 240 or something like that. It would be hard for one of our fifth graders, even in an advanced math class or doing really well, to have jumped that many points kind of in a given year.
Would it have been possible to take the 2011-12 and convert that into the old score to see?
Well, we wouldn't have had their old growth target because they get a new growth target every year.
So we wouldn't have known.
So it's, no, it's not possible to reverse engineer it.
No. The one, the and again, you know, we're choosing to show by kids meeting their growth targets. A new study that NWA just released is they studied it long enough now where they feel that they can do a fairly good job of predicting ACT scores based on math scores beginning in third grade. Now, I know Tara's looking at me, really, but they've looked at it for a good, you know, 12 plus years to be able to track it over time. We haven't really kind of done anything with it. I've looked at it. I mean, I'd be worried, kind of the ramifications of what that could mean, because I don't want it to become all about do whatever you can to get a higher math score. But that's just kind of a new...
So,
what they've just recently released this year.
So, do we have, as part of our report card, do we have a target percentage of kids that need to meet the growth from spring to spring for meeting? Do we have a goal set for that? In other words, are we measuring this now just to, you know, measure it and understand it, or do we have a target that says, you know, we want 70% of our kids to be able to achieve the growth target?
Well, and I think, in a, first of all, our preference would probably be fall to spring, and that's what teachers like to look at because that's their sphere of influence for kids. So
yeah, either way, I don't care.
And we do have it on the scorecard.
On the scorecard. Mm-hmm.
But it's not 70%. Each grade level has a target that I believe is 10% above or 5% above the previous year's target. It's not across the board. It's dependent upon each grade and where they're at.
I don't know. I'm just asking. But would it be possible to put a bar across this to see, like you did with the 85%, or is it
based on what the scorecard? I think the scorecard is variable.
Yeah, we didn't include the scorecard this year. We did last year, and the reason we didn't include the scorecard targets is because one of CIT's major pieces of work this year will be to revise the scorecard. And both in terms of new long-range plan and also looking at the new map configuration.
I mean, the reason I ask, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like we were putting more faith in the map testing than we were in the ISAT, as everyone knows my opinion of the ISAT. So,
and I still would. Particularly because it'll show growth over time,
right,
for
individual
kids.
Which is what we care about, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
exactly.
Kids grow differently. Some never grow at all. So I'm just wondering, you know, are we successful here in this growth or not successful? Or
I think because of with the new growth targets as part of that new
growth. You just don't know.
I don't think we know.
I mean, it's just concerning that it's only really half. Seems like it's half the kids. I mean,
right.
I know we don't know what that means, but...
Well, what's significant is what you're saying, Karen, and that I'm a child, and I'm at 240 for my score. And I can, you know, to move 2-3 points is significant because I'm already at that high level. So, you know, to John's kind of set of questions, and I think you explained this the last time when we knew that the norms were changing. What was the value in doing that by NWEA? What was the purpose?
Why they're being normed?
They're
now administering the test to thousands and thousands of districts. And so the last norming sample they had, particularly at the finery grades and that, they had so few participants that they felt like, you know.
So their sample sizes.
Their sample size was bigger, and it's not unusual for all testing organizations to be normed every few years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of it, you know, there's going to be money connected to it in some way too, but they just seem to really...
Well, it's a calibration.
Yeah, you know, just to kind of... And I suspect they'll probably be normed sooner because of the release of new test items and what that might mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, these are numbers. I guess I don't know if we're doing anything with student by student, you know, you fell into the category of I met my growth or I didn't. I think the teachers would probably have a sense to say, you know what, maybe they didn't meet their number, but this kid is really growing a lot, which is what we care about. And then if there's a teacher that says, gee, you know, this kid really isn't growing a lot, that's the one that we have to really figure out how we help that child grow.
Well, and this is that, Karen, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that one of our numerous issues with our schools that didn't make AYP, that they're not looking at the growth that these kids have made? They may not have hit the target, but they've made substantial amounts of growth. They just didn't hit whatever the
AYP
target was.
Yeah.
But this would argue that a lot of kids aren't.
No, I agree.
But I think your point is right on target, John, that grade-level PLCs, that's the work they do, is looking at the individual students. And last year, in fact, at our achievement update from the BLTs, one of our schools, I don't remember if it was Franklin or which school, looked at actually how close those kids who didn't make it, how close were they? So that you get a different picture even then, that you know, some students may have only been 2 points away from meeting their growth target. And so they go down a much deeper dive than we do.
And actually, I was thinking that you could kind of stack the bars and say 54%, you know, I hate to use the word, whatever, exceeded, X percent met, and X percent missed by, you know, whatever, and then you really get a sense of who are the ones that really missed a lot.
Right, but we can't do that. We don't have the ability to do that data analysis. It would have to be done student by student and from the school level.
The other thing that happens at the building level is they'll also, this is just their overall score, but they'll look at the different strands in both these kind of like the substandard areas too, to get a better idea, especially when they're hitting those connected standards or related units within math, just to kind of see where their kids are at.
So your next chart is math. Did they renormalize those as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they
did. I was trying to help you move along since I was
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. Yeah, right, you can bring up. And just like with ISAT, our math scores are higher than. In reading. And if you look at fourth grade, meeting their growth target, they saw an upward trend for the past 3 years. Granted, you know, you're not looking at cohort, but it just kind of from that fall to spring there. So, and then here you've got your spring to spring. And from spring to spring in general, it just looks slower. You know, like John said, where you don't have many kids kind of meeting the growth target. And the growth target will be different from spring to spring versus a fall to spring.
So we have to be careful how we look at these. All data.
At least, I mean, unfortunately, it's you know, to have had 3 years, of, you know, we usually like to start getting trend data by 3 years, and then we saw new norms, and now we're going to have new questions. But I think it's still worth kind of monitoring, and particularly as adults and individual students as well.
So I'm with you on the 3 years, but I guess I want to make sure I'm not misinterpreting this. I'll go with the green one.
Want to go back to math?
Yeah, just go back to the green one. And then, yeah, so when I compare 72 versus 49%, that's on the old standard, or that's on the new standard normalized for the new standard? In other words,
they recalculated using the new norms, but the growth targets were not recalculated to see if they would help.
So last year when we looked at this and we didn't have the new norms, I'm assuming the trend wasn't paid from 72 to 49.
Right, because last year we didn't look at this. The numbers would have been different.
Yeah.
We didn't look at spring to spring last year.
Well, okay.
But even on the fall to spring, because we didn't use and had applied the new norms, we wouldn't have seen those exact same numbers. Mm-hmm. On the recalculation. The new data we thought we would include, because at the elementary level, each of our buildings has a data wall. They really look at this to monitor individual student progress. And so along the left-hand column is a reading level, and we often refer to it as the F&P. It's founded in Pennell, or the two women who created the benchmark assessment system and wrote the program in that. So the first slide is going to show you the number of students and then percent. And so you can see, and this is, you know, at the end of the year where our kindergartners ended up each year from 2010 to 2011 to 2012. So let's just look at that pre-A group, and this is pre-A means there's really not a whole lot of words in the book. And if there is a word, it's going to be associated with a picture. But as you go across...
So how do I interpret this? Pre-A, 16%? Or
16 kids back in 2010 would have ended kindergarten at that reading level. In 2011, 14 kids. Last year, 5. So reading at a level A, as you go across, you have fewer kids. Kind of in summary is that... We're getting our kids, you know, at or above their reading levels by grade level. There are benchmarks set by Fountas and Pinnell that give us targets where each of our kids should end up. But overall, and keep in mind, they're going to be different students. So if I'm looking at in 2012, that first grader who's at 3A would not hear in kindergarten. Kind of the year before. So they're moving in, things like that. But what we wanted to do is just kind of show you kind of how we're moving through the literacy block and the instruction and greater emphasis on Common Core, stronger targets. You know, years ago, we weren't getting as many kids to those level Cs and D at the end of kindergarten. And you can see where we're really pushing to get our kids. And then in red there, a literacy specialist kind of looked at kind of what Fountas and Pinnell said as an end of the year target, and then kind of using the Common Core, where we would want that target to be. And you can see how in red, we do have a number of kids who are already reaching that target at the different grade levels. So we will continue to kind of have that expectation. K through 5 is administered and recorded at least twice a year. It's often we do a third recording in the winter in that. And at Hadley, for many of our kids who are reading at grade level, I mean, you can't go any higher than a C. So once you're there, there's no need to kind of keep to re-administer it in that. But this year we asked kind of anybody we were worried about in Hadley, our special ed kids, our ELL kids, to get that kind of benchmark data just so that we can continue to monitor, are we missing anybody? Mm-hmm. But this gives you not only their reading level, it has comprehension questions associated with it, and it provides the teachers with an opportunity to do what we call a miscue analysis that helps them really look at where the child is breaking down in the area of reading. So it gives them valuable information, and then they can target those interventions or instructional skills in small group around those deficit areas.
Why is there that wall, I guess, about three or four down from the end of the shaded block? It does statistically, it seems very bizarre to have this huge chunk and then it stops instead of.
Where are you at?
I'm looking at the bottom of any of them. You know, so like for spring 2011, look at the first graders, you got that big 99 chunk. You look at the second graders, you got that 161 chunk at the bottom, you know, and then all of a sudden it stops. I mean, why don't you see that continue down, I guess, with a drop? You know, I'm thinking like a bell curve.
Right. Well, so you're already asking, I mean, kids, well, a couple of reasons. We don't ask teachers when they give the assessment, they usually only go to about a year up, because you could keep assessing and assessing and assessing. So we don't ask them to keep giving the test until they're done. Are there kids who can probably go higher? Yes. But also the amount of time it takes, because it's one-on-one and that. So we just, and once you know they're above grade level, you can start going deeper and using more informational text. Because a lot of our fiction content isn't always very age or grade appropriate for our high readers. We don't want them kind of reading about those kinds of things, so we try to find that informational text instead. So you will have readers beyond that, but we ask them not to go.
How do I know on this chart where the above grade level is, whether it's A, G, or L, or
the
bottom of the box?
The shaded area, is the grade level.
That's right. And then anything below that shaded box is above grade level.
Mm-hmm. So you can see how it stops at the end of target for the next grade level.
That's a really important piece of information you just shared, Karen, and that is that these are, if I heard you correctly, one-on-one tests. So the amount of teacher time it takes, which is understandable that you want to take a mark at the year and then see where they are. But like you said, you could be doing this all year long.
And a lot of times what teachers at the primary grades in particular, they won't do a complete benchmark assessment with Autism Canal. They'll get a running record. And that's where they have the child read a book at any one of those levels, and they make like little hash marks to see kind of how many errors and are they progressing and moving along to those next levels.
Okay. Got it.
With so many students above the grade level, I mean, is it time to meet the targets? Or?
Well, and the red targets is kind of where they're suggesting. We think, you know, some of the grade levels is still kind of well within that. I think maybe we'll keep it here and see where we're at, and then if we adjust it, come down.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of reading ahead to when I look at percentages.
On the next slide.
Yeah, on the next slide. So, like, if I look at the second graders, I see, like 60, if I look at the second grade for 2012, spring.
For 2012, yeah.
I see, you know, 46 plus 11, 57. 67, 72% of the kids above grade level. So I wonder, does that mean we need to bring the whole grade level up or have more opportunities for those kids? I'm just seeing a huge chunk below that shaded area. So to me, that means we've got a ton of kids way above this grade level.
Who are reading above grade level.
Right.
And part of what helps and what might be pushing those higher numbers into those ranges than the small group instruction that occurs in guided reading, because you're individualizing and tailoring that to their reading level.
So the benchmark is a marker but having the kids be more advanced and better readers than that does not stop them from getting the deeper, more enriched reading experience because they're doing guided reading groups.
The other nice thing that you don't see here, but we see in our data warehouse, is Gail Lucas did a beautiful job of taking what the norms are from Fountain to now and just did the chart over time. So as teachers measure it, they can see, you know, where a child's progress from year to year, fall, winter, and spring, and how it compares to more the norm example than just District 41, but I think kind of what the literacy specialists are suggesting here is to maybe start adjusting those targets and raising them up a little bit. And what that does for some of our kids who they look then even more discrepant compared to what our norms are. And teachers recognize that and they feel that, you know, in the classroom and trying to meet their needs.
So is it fair to say it seems like 90%+ of our kids on the ISAT in all subjects are meeting or exceeding. We've got on average less than 10% that are either below or in academic warning. We seem to have made progress in the Black and Hispanic group around reading, starting math. Seems like we've made exceptional progress with Black and Hispanic in math. Seems like we've made some progress in reading with Black and Hispanic, but, you know, not as much as in math, but we've made some good progress. And then overall, it seems like the math trend and the science trend or down, science specifically in fourth grade. Are those kind of like the areas that are takeaway from this and the areas that we're going to focus in on?
What did you say about math?
Exceptional progress.
Math and sound.
Like we're juggling a little bit
down. For Black and Hispanic, we made a lot of progress in math.
And
overall, as a group, though, in our district, the math trend seems to have gone down.
Bless you. Okay. I don't think it's gone down.
Overall, I wouldn't. I mean, you only have one grade level that went down slightly. That would be our current sixth graders who were in fifth grade last year. Everybody else either kind of stayed the same or
whatever. Okay. So I misread the math. And then we still have this nagging problem of the sixth graders turning into seventh and eighth graders, right? That between that meets and exceeds, there's still a huge gap there.
What do you look
in math? Just the meets
in the ISAT. Just it seems like there's always that drop of kids that were exceeding for a long time, dropping into the meets.
Well, remember the state adjusts those levels randomly year to year.
The other thing,
it just seems like the trend has been forever and nobody's really tracking.
The other thing that we will be looking at again this year, we'll get updated data that is done from our benchmarking study where it's an index of performance on the ISAT so that the meets and exceeds is not, it's factored across the state with a factor of 100, that index that that study we had done last year. We'll get our updated data on that. We at least can see really apples to apples rather than trying to guess what it means when the meets and exceeds goes down.
And this was the benchmark study that
correct
we
that
initiated.
We paid for last year.
Yeah.
Good. Next steps.
So again, at the building level, teachers continue to work with that math data. Do you remember Odyssey? Is the program that we purchased in the spring, and that's what's aligned with their math results. So the kids all had a backpack from last spring that they could work on over the summer, and then that will be updated automatically once they take the fall math test, so their backpacks will change accordingly, the old stuff will go away. You know, just living with it a little bit this summer, and kind of fielding some of the phone calls. For some reason, parents had called some of the math way too easy or way too hard. And I had like a second grade mom call and said, they're supposed to be dividing like fractions or something. It was very random. So we adjusted, you know, their math tests. And I'm going to meet with, kindergarten doesn't take the math test in the fall. So I'm meeting with the kindergarten teachers on Friday, and they're going to establish backpacks for all their kindergartners so that they have something to be working on as well. So I think continuing Odyssey, teachers felt like they saw, those that did it over the summer, signs of kind of the influence of the Common Core within those types of questions, things like that. And there's opportunities for kids to do writing in that too. We had one little guy, he had to like submit, he would submit this two-page paper. And we couldn't, it was still so new, we couldn't figure out like what we're supposed to do and how we're supposed to get it. But we're learning all about that. So we'll continue to use it. We will target kids below the 30th percentile to really encourage them to spend 60 to 90 minutes. But the research said even if they're spending 30 minutes a week in each subject, kids have shown double-digit growth. So, you know, I don't know if that in and of itself will make a difference in kids meeting their growth targets. So again, a few other things with, you know, with math, we're moving forward with the Common Core standards, continued transition this year. At all grade levels, the math specialists are going to continue to help teachers with that. I mentioned, well, great tasks. You heard a lot about last year, and we've created some additional ones. They'll be due for trimester. Our elementary teachers are going to include that on the report card this year and start scoring them. As I mentioned earlier, too, we've got the new literacy modules. In grades 3 through 8, they are aligned to the PAR content framework. They did come out with a revised version already of the content framework. However, when we laid it side by side, what looked like was hanging out on the end narrative, they still have it. They just put it in another colored column, so it didn't look like it was an add-on. It is still there. And then it was only kind of language and a couple paragraphs that looked different. So we're pretty hopeful that we're on the right track. And then what we would like to do is use some of the work from the module to create these benchmark assessments in literacy that will look more at that heavy influence of writing. And we'll be looking at those grad science standards. And finally, LLT will be working on our assessment tool for assessment. One other thing too, that K-2 has not released, doesn't have the content frameworks yet. They've talked about releasing them for this year. Any other questions?
Well, what groups do not mean anyway? All right, let me ask this. It's Churchville of his choice. Lincoln is choice.
Well, Lincoln is not choice because they don't receive Title I funds, but this year they did not make AYP.
Okay.
For the first
time.
So
what subgroup was that?
I don't know. Linda?
Low
economic, yeah.
Which is the same one at Churchill.
Well, Churchill we have low SES, low income, and I believe LEP and special ed. No, we didn't have a not special ed. LEP.
So, not choice.
No, and never will be. Even if they don't make AYP next year because they do not receive Title I funds, they won't be choice. Similar to Hadley. Hadley has not made AYP, but it's not receiving Title I funds.
And, you know, and still put so much back to that subgroup because Lincoln next year could have 44 kids, and we even 20 would be a factor. I mean, it's just. If that number of 45. Not that we're not concerned with any of the kids aren't, but
the reporting is affected by that.
How much Title I funds
we received, Julie, about what, 100 and
215?
But believe me, we've asked the same question that you might be thinking.
it's a very valid question because for the amount of money that we're given, what does it cost us and the extra expenses of the busing and some of the other miscellaneous? I certainly don't mean the educational resources that we employ at those schools because we would do that regardless. But some of the other costs that we incur by accepting those funds.
The there is a neighboring school district that did some deep exploration around rejecting their Title I funds and came this close to doing so. And so they realized because the federal one funds, all federal funds are tied to No Child Left Behind. And so if you if they didn't take their Title I funds, they also lost other title funds as well as their IDEA money. And IDEA money being the really important financial constraint, because that's a huge expense in a district.
And how did the ISD need the size they implemented? I thought only the federal they lowered the.
They have control over the state markings. What they don't have control over the federal law.
So they could they keep it at 85?
Well, they can only keep it till 2014.
Then what happens?
Then it has to be 100%.
What
is that? It'll adjust again.
Does it expire unless you renew it, or it's automatic?
It is expired in 2014, the current rendition of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. And so without reauthorization, it probably will continue as is. The problem will be that you have reached the end of the mark. So I don't know what you do when 2015, 100%, 100%, yeah. So as you know, that in the last 2 years, the current administration has tried to reauthorize, but has had no success in Congress in general, and because there are other more pressing issues that have faced the Congress, they have continued to put No Child Left Behind on the back burner. There have been several proposals made, but none of them have come to fruition. I would guess after the election, we won't see much either. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next 2 years.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
Well done. All right, on to our consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes item one, the human resources, personnel report, employment recommendations, resignations, item two, finance, facility, and operations, item three, other matters, approval of board meeting minutes, August 27, 2012, the regular board meeting, August 27, 2012, regular board meeting, closed session, the semi-annual review of closed session minutes, and the destruction of closed session audio recordings.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Cowell?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Fenwick?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item B, Superintendent's Recommendations. The FGM Contract Renewal Amendment 23 Professional Services Agreement. At its August 27th meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to renew the district's contract with FGM Architects. Amendment 23 incorporates all of the anticipated work that will be required of FGM Architects during fiscal year 2013 at an estimated cost of $250,000. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Discussion.
I'm sorry, discussion.
I just have one thing I just want to make sure I understood. I thought last time somebody raised the issue of whether we should keep using the same person or put out an RFP, or I thought there was a discussion around how do we know if they've met their success criteria. Did we agree that all that happened in the finance committee, or is that something where the finance committee agreed that we're good to go?
And we did send you a copy of that evaluation.
Yeah.
So you
this was the rubric that Bob created.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, everyone's good.
The question that I recall was, had we put something in procedures or policy that said this is the mechanism to say we're good with the architect, we're not good. And I thought that was something that was still pending.
Well, we gave that to you. We discussed it at finance. We brought it back to finance for your review, and then you asked us to include it in one of my communications to the board.
Which so this was the, correct me if I'm wrong, consultant performance evaluation.
Correct.
And so Bob has FGM, and then with the assessment scores for all the professional services, any comments, the scoring, and you know, anything germane to it. So this was that, you know, tool, for lack of a better word, that alerted us to any concerns, questions, etc. that we received.
Is that what you're talking about?
This one?
Yeah. Well, that's the matrix. The what I recall was that on an annual basis, we were going to say yay or nay, and I thought that was done as a discussion piece as opposed to prior to voting.
You mean that we took formal action on that?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have that in policy as we bring the update to finance annually. That was our discussion at finance, that we would let finance committee know whether or not we continue to be satisfied with our current professional services following the summer projects, and that if there wasn't satisfaction, then we would do an RFQ for future work. But if we were, we would maintain our relationship with that provider.
Okay, and the board was notified of all that.
Correct.
Right.
Okay, and that was through the
my communication with the board, and after having shared the evaluation with the finance committee. Finance committee affirmed that and asked that I share it with the full board.
Okay, so that's essentially my question. Finance looked at this scorecard, said, yep, they've met all their needs, and there's no need we're satisfied, there's no need to go out.
And we discussed, you know, questions about last year's performance, this year's performance.
And the tool was created to your point, Drew, cause that annual conversation to be codified, essentially. So that's what that was. All right. Any other discussion?
Well, I had a few questions that I asked Ann and Bob actually jointly prior to the meeting, and I think it might be a good idea if I ask them again.
Sure.
So the other board members can hear. Should I just ask?
Do you want to share the questions and the answers that you asked about the phases, and you asked about why are we meeting monthly or weekly, and I can't remember what the third question was.
The weekly meetings were the master planning project. I was just curious as to why it was. It had to be on a weekly basis. And
you asked what was the difference between the phases of the master? And these were all questions related to master planning, which on your
the track A versus track B.
Yeah, and track A versus track B in the document relate, and this is in your more detailed memo that you received. Track A and track B is short-term work that we're doing relative to Think Tank and Hadley.
Mm-hmm.
And track B is the master facility plan revision. So you got short-term and then the whole master facility plan revision. The phases that have been outlined for you in that memo really look the same because each phase is dependent upon the previous phase. So the components of the phases are the same. The content of those phases will be really generated by the content of our conversations and the degree to which we're informed from think tank work or the degree to which we finish up the LLC work, and that informs changes that we might make in the master facility revision.
And it was my understanding that all these meetings may or may not occur.
Depends. I mean, it really is going to depend. We've had we've been meeting very regularly. I think Bob outlined, that was probably in finance committee, that the Hadley group wasn't meeting every week, but now that school is back in session, the Hadley group is meeting every week so that they can get their recommendations shaped in time for capital projects. We meet weekly or every other week on Thursday mornings as a cabinet team. I mentioned to Sam that because I have a commitment every first and third Thursday with our association for a meeting, that we may not be meeting every week because there's that prohibitor. So then this is kind of the big picture and the max of what we would need to do in order to fulfill this work, which may get adjusted as we go along.
So the $250,000 budget
could be less.
Could be less.
Yeah.
Depends on what work needs to
right.
be done and what meetings.
Right. And if it were more than that, we'd have to come back to you.
Mm-hmm. And the only other question I had, which I didn't ask prior to the meeting, mm-hmm. so I apologize for that, was...
As long as it's not a stumper.
It may be.
Drum roll.
Because the only... In my professional life, I've never come across or had to deal with any of this type of contract other than the hourly rates.
Mm-hmm.
And in my experience, they may or may not be negotiable. So, not to put you on the spot, but as long as we've had FGM as our architect of record, have these rates ever been negotiated or asked to be negotiated?
No, we've only done comparisons to see if they're in the ballpark with other firms similar to that do other work like
other
that.
Other local?
Mm-hmm. Well, other educational firms, which may or may not be local, but do the same kind of work.
Did they go up from last year?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. They went up maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but they've been pretty consistent the past couple of years.
Sam, these are always negotiable, in my opinion.
Well, then the question begets one that I had asked. This was a while ago and not at a meeting, but just to Ann or Bob, I can't remember. But that is all of a company's professional services can be as they laid out, which I think was helpful for us. But within this are also ad hoc conversations, other meetings that may be a quick phone call that we don't necessarily get billed for. And that's why I think I like the rubric, because it does also talk about the relationship piece, which I think is important for the district. So there's that piece that isn't quantifiable necessarily, but certainly qualitative in terms of what we get from them. And that, I know we've talked about that in the past.
But they don't do billable hours.
Yeah.
So we have many, many, many conversations with them that are not charged.
Or,
and so the negotiations really probably comes in, Sam, more as project, depth of project.
That's a trick point, because usually it seems like it's always 10 to 12%. But, if you can package, can we package all these projects together so they fit within their limits to get that price break? So for instance, $1 million to $1.5 million is 9.25%. It seems like since we're giving a big chunk of business, that there should be some sort of a price break. Versus they just take this little $200,000 project, that's 10%,
12%. Just to give you an example, like the painting projects last year, we bid that internally. That was about a $180,000 contract. Right now we're going through the LMC analysis for Hadley, and in another separate track we're doing the STEM lab for the elementary level. Those are traveling really at two different speeds right now. In order to get the work completed during the summer of 2013, we need to get this Hadley project out on the street, as we call it, bidding, probably by mid to late December.
Mm-hmm.
The decisions really haven't been made yet in terms of where we're going to go with this STEM or STEAM lab, and that decision probably won't come up until, I'm going to say, January or February. Because of the unique aspects of the Hadley project, we really need to track this individually and get this prepared.
No, I understand that, but I'm just looking at, for a $1.8 million project, or a $1.6 million project, we're estimating $200,000 a week. And so that's 12, 13, 14%. That seems like there should be a way you can aggregate it all, and then that is the appropriate.
I believe we've come into this, had this conversation with FGM previously, and they they build things as they occur, but then at the end of the year, there's sort of a reconciliation in terms of what was the total value of your project, and they have made adjustments previously. Like you say, if they're doing $800,000 worth of work, and then all of a sudden, you know, the projects, we might bring other projects on board, it may bump it up to $1.4 million or something. There have been adjustments made previously, and that's certainly a conversation we can have with them. So although we may bid them individually, when you look at the total value of the projects that are bid within a current fiscal year, we could have that or would have that discussion with them.
And I think what Dan and Sam are suggesting is that the structure around the cost, overall cost, is an aggregate of the total projected cost, and that it's in a 10% range rather than individually determined, here this project will be X dollars, this project will be this, that the overall is not disaggregated, and they look at it kind of broad brush, and here's what it is. Is that what you're suggesting? Which is, you know, certainly something we can approach them with, but we'd have to bring you back an amendment. I mean, if we, unless you table this tonight, because otherwise we're not working with FGM. Right now they're working without contract on these special projects. I mean, we have a continuing contract with them as it relates to typical work, but...
Can I ask you a real quick question on the basic services relating to the MFP?
Can you quote the number? Are you talking about Project 12-1499?
I go to phase 5.
Oh, you're looking at the memo?
I'm looking at the memo.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm looking at 3 and 4 of the memo. And I see 500 hours between phase 1, 2, 3, 4, but I don't see hours for the final report. And I don't have a dollar amount for the final report. Is that included in...
Yes, that's included. That's a culmination of all the work of the previous four phases. Phase 5 is the final report, and that would be all the work rolled in together.
So that there would not be an additional
not beyond phase 1 through 4.
Can I ask a question? Did this go to finance first before it came to us?
Yes.
So this is about the fifth or sixth time at this point we've had this conversation. Is that fair to say?
I think it's third. I'm assuming finance approved this. Finance is okay.
Right. So I just want
to question, I guess.
Well, that's sort of my question. I'm just, I would have assumed that this would not have been brought to us with this many questions, rehashing the same issues over and over again, if it had already passed through finance, and obviously the members of this board sit on that finance committee. So I'm just trying to find the point of this discussion.
I think the biggest question was raised around the master facility piece, which is Project 12-1499.02, and we sent the board then a more detailed
right.
listing of what that work would entail. And
that's a budget thing.
Pardon me?
That's a budget.
The numbers
for that. The estimated budget for the phases.
That's included in this report.
Right.
We follow that with a more detailed just pulling out the master facility work and sent that to you, and that seems to be where the questions are coming from today or tonight. I will say I didn't receive any questions in between the time I sent it to you and if there's a letter a week and a half ago, I believe.
And I think, just to move this forward, the question that Sam and Dan have is certainly about that larger contract. Are there any other questions, discussion about this piece, because this is what we need to vote on. Right. Okay. Any other discussion? Thank you. Thank you, Sam. All right. Roll call, please.
Mr. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Grant?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Fenwick?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right. Thank you. Superintendent's report.
I'm going to forego my superintendent's report for the moment because we have guests that have just arrived, and it's perfect timing. And so I'd like to suggest that we move on the agenda from the superintendent's report and the board reports to superintendent search firm, if that's all right. And I'd like to, at this time, I'd like at this time to call Steve Ondrak, if I may, and,
yep.
and see if he's available to talk with us. And then we'll welcome Hank Metro and Joanne Desmond.
Bienvenue au Hilton Garden Inn, Montréal, Centreville. Je suis à l'appareil. Comment puis-je vous aider, Mère?
Room 512, please.
And the guest last name?
Vondrak.
Just looking. Perfect. I'll transfer right away.
Thank you.
In Montreal.
Oh, okay. Good.
I thought I might have to rely on John to translate.
I thought it was Texas.
Oh.
Hi, Steve? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can hear
yes,
you.
Thanks,
welcome to the board meeting. And we are just now moving to the superintendent search. And I'll let you go ahead and
welcome
over, Erica.
Welcome, Hank Jamicho and Joanne Desmond. If you wouldn't mind, you know, moving up to the front of the room, that would be great. Welcome. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you for inviting
me. Just as a quick recap, and then I'm going to toss it over to Tara. We are in the middle of deciding between two search firms to run the superintendent search. And one of the firms is Hazard, Young, and Atea. Am I saying that correctly? At our special board meeting of August 20th, Hank notified us, he was with Peter Flynn, Pete Flynn, that the third member that was going to be a part of it was not able to do it because she took an interim superintendent position. So, so in the interim, John and Tara got back with, as our board reps, to coordinate Hazard, Young, and Atea and the other search firm that we're looking at, Ray and Associates, with some questions, but then also to invite you back in order to meet Joanne and give us a 10-minute highlight of background, et cetera.
I'd be happy to. Hi, I'm Joanne. Nice to see you. I shake all of your hands. I know you're in the middle of a meeting, and I don't want to take any more time. First of all, I have been a senior associate with Hazard and Young doing searches for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I have done more than I can count. but my background is, actually, I've been a teacher, a math teacher, high school math teacher. I was a building level administrator, central office administrator, assistant superintendent, and I've been a superintendent for the school district. Frankfurt 157, so you probably on the south suburbs, and then North Shore 112 in Highland Park and Highwood. And then I retired 10 years ago and have been working since then as the superintendent of Bannockburn. You've probably never heard of it, but it's a really little tiny district. I've been doing that in my retirement for 100 days a year. And my last day was August 31st after 10 years. Finally, I was retired. So
we're going to put it back to work.
Work for you. More work for you, I guess, is what you said. But I certainly am accustomed to working in districts with high expectations and looking for high-quality leaders for their school district. I think that's a hugely important thing. And obviously the most important thing a Board of Education has to do. And I've done searches. We just finished Lake Bluff, which is out our direction. Hinsdale, working on Riverside right now. I've done St. Charles, Oswego, and Illinois. I've done Wisconsin also. Districts your size, bigger, smaller, lots of districts, but primarily districts that are looking for top quality educational leadership. I'm happy to answer any questions.
And just one other reason, as Erica said, Barb took the position of
acting interim superintendent in Sunnybrook. So when we thought about putting the team together, Joanne and I have worked together a number of times on various searches, and I know she's a superstar in terms of the ability to work with communities and understand the expectations of communities, relate to those individuals. She also worked actually with Anne when Anne was in Highland Park. So
she knows me a little bit.
Yes.
I know. Yes, I do.
So,
it's all good.
So I just thought it was a nice addition to our team.
Good.
Peter being new, Joanne brings great experience over the years, and particularly with districts very similar to yours. They're very similar kinds of expectations of their communities and very similar expectations of the board in terms of the quality of work that gets done. So
I don't know. I don't live in Glen Allen, but I'm very familiar with it. I do have a cousin who lives here, and that's it. But I'm, you know, very familiar with the area.
And then Jen had also asked for some additional references, and we sent those of places you could contact that. We personally have worked in all of the districts that we sent, so you can talk with, directly with board members who know us and the work that we have done with them.
Obviously, this will be your search. We want to tailor it to your needs. We want to be responsive to what you're looking for. We've done lots of searches, but every board has unique needs and processes, and your community is going to be special because it's your community, and they may have different wants and needs than some of the other communities, but our job is to listen and to help you do the most important job you have to do, and that's to find top quality leaders. And what we do very well is recruit, especially in this marketplace where recruiting is very, very important.
Are there any specific questions for Joanne?
So, based on your the references, you've added a few more searches together, or you've done more of that?
Yeah. I mean,
those are the ones that come to mind, Hinsdale, Lake Bluff.
That we've done directly together, that we partnered on, probably.
And, Hank, when did, because you had, I think, Barbara West in there. When did she take that job?
She actually officially accepted it the Monday that we were doing the interview. She was offered the position on Friday before we were interviewing with you. So that's why I shared with you that she had just recently taken it. So.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't here for that meeting.
Right.
So. And so I know you said you've done a lot of searches. We're sort of counting them up. Have you done 10 searches?
At least 10, yes.
15? 10 to 15?
Probably at least one a year, if not two a year,
yeah,
for the most part.
Right.
10 to 15
years. I don't like to do too many because I think that dilutes the amount of time that I can give a school board. So I've pretty much limited it to no more than two searches a year. And so I don't like to do, you know, it's important to give the school board the time and attention that they need. So I don't want to be running back and forth with other districts.
You've been doing the 100 days for the past 10 years, right? Yeah.
One of the things that this board has talked about, a focus of, is somewhat of a national search. And I think perhaps our definition of national search may have changed over time in terms of what we are realizing can and should be done. But in your experience, what, for a district like ours and in your experience, what would you say a national search might entail for us?
Well, certainly, we have a national network, and we would be recruiting nationally. Now, the candidates that would be most attracted to your district would likely be someone who has some connection to Illinois, or they are retiring from another state at age 50 or 55. If that, you know, we would be looking for what profile you're looking for, obviously, for that type of candidate. But a lot of people have family that live in Illinois, and they may be out of state for a while, and they want to come back. That generally, because of the pension system, people don't move from state to state a lot, unless there's a reason to leave and come back to Illinois, for example. So we would be looking for people that obviously would have a desire to come back to live here. And so, you know, we find some districts, most of the candidates are from out of state. In some districts, hardly any of the candidates are from out of state. It just depends on the profile that's developed and the characteristics that the board is seeking after we do our report and the board develops the characteristics. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're looking for someone with experience, if you're looking for someone that might be an assistant superintendent, if you're looking for someone that is at the end of their career, someone that's at the beginning of their career, there's a lot of questions. But a national search, I mean, that would identify someone probably that has a lot of experience that's moving into Illinois, but that's looking to come to this area.
I think the other piece is the direction that you have set as a board. My sense is you're comfortable with that, and that you're looking for somebody who's going to continue that and enhance it and expand upon it, but I don't have the sense that you're looking to turn the place upside down and start again. So once that gets defined and you collect all that information, a large piece of that recruitment effort is going to be who has the skills to continue with the direction that you have set and the philosophy that you have set. Because you don't want somebody to come in, even though they may be a very talented superintendent, who philosophically believes you should be moving in a different direction. So that's one of the reasons why gathering that information and figuring that out. And that will be critical in terms of recruiting people, to find people who have that philosophical approach that you feel is the direction you want to move in.
Steve, I don't want to leave you out. Do you have any questions for Joanne?
No, nothing. No new questions.
Okay.
Joanne, how do you go about vetting candidates?
Well, first, the most important thing is what you're looking for and trying to find a match for what you're looking for. Then we have a national network of 100 associates that are out there that also get information and give us information. Actually, you know, we know of a great superintendent or a great assistant superintendent that would fit that profile. So we get that information. We obviously have people that are looking for jobs apply on our website. We're one of the very largest firms that do this kind of work. So the other thing we do, though, is we recruit. We get the word out there what we're looking for, and we make our contacts. I've been in the business 43 years. I hate to say that number, but there's a lot of people out there I know, and it is a finite network of people that are qualified to do the job. It's just a finite network. So, you know, we know somebody who knows somebody or knows of somebody, and that's another way that we do recruiting. And, you know, obviously the applications come in and, you know, we may have an application or two that we've not heard of and that's worth pursuing. But recruiting is an important part of the job because, especially in this economy, people aren't real eager to move around a lot. To sell your house in this economy is difficult. So we often have to attract people to the concept of moving. I know every job I've taken, I've been recruited for. Well, except the first one. The first one I worked really hard for. But after that, the consultants came to me and said, you know, there's this great job, you would be a good match for this. And I said, no, thank you, I'm really happy where I'm at. And they called me again and they said, I think you really should look at this. And I said, well, so, you know, they persuaded me to consider something I would not have considered before. And actually, were it not for that, I'd still be in the very first place I started. And so that's what we do. We get people excited about wanting to be a part of that district. And just think of the opportunity here and the professional growth. And this is what they're looking for. You know, what do you think about that? Mm-hmm. And that's how we get people to look at opportunities that they would not have looked at before.
And John, I think the other piece of, after recruiting the candidates, the vetting piece of it really entails two very significant pieces. One is we want to talk to everybody that they list as a formal reference, but no one lists a reference on their application that isn't going to be positive and glowing. So you usually can anticipate what you're going to hear from those individuals. We also like to get from that network of people or from people that we know that individual, two or three or four professional confidential references that will tell us that this person really does live up to their rep, or this person lives up to the criteria that you're talking about, or they've had experience here, and we get that confidential endorsement. We need to have that, and we always try to get confidential endorsements on candidates before we would ever present them to a board. So while we check all the formal references, the confidential references are equally, if not more, important to us. And then the final piece of the vetting is, once you identify your preferred candidate, there's a whole process that's included in the search fee to go through every public record of the candidate's past 7 years of residency in terms of any criminal court, civil court records, financial records, driving records, their degrees awarded, the accreditation of the awarding institution. So that is done by Baker Eubanks as a third party company to actually go to the courthouses of that person's place of residence for the last 7 years to check the records, not just an electronic online search of that.
And we recommend that even when the board is narrowed down to that one candidate, that a job not be offered until we get that report back. That just, you know, verifies that this person has passed all the tests, that there aren't any surprises out there.
Mm-hmm. Just a question on logistics. So how will you individually work with Pete and then Hank as a partner? What's your role?
Well, I would probably be co-leading it.
Okay.
And we would, you know, when it's focus groups time, we would both be doing interviews with various stakeholder groups. Mm-hmm. And I'd be in one room doing interviews, and he would be in another room doing interviews, and Pete would probably be working with me and also in participating. We would all have input in writing the project and writing the report back to the board. Mm-hmm. When it comes to interviewing, we would all be interviewing candidates. We would all be recruiting candidates. You know, we would work as a team.
And I wanted to make sure we had somebody on the team that, if for some reason I cannot be here, even though my intention is to be part of the search every step of the process and be involved in all of it, if something does come up, I wanted somebody who had led searches before, and I had enough faith to say Joanne could handle any step of it.
Yeah.
Something came up at the last minute for the firm piece of it. But my intention is to be involved in every meeting and every activity, and we co-lead that. That's what we did in Lake Bluff, and that's what we did in Hinsdale.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything
else? You just had one extra person, and that would be, you know, Pete would be joining us as an extra person, too.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Okay. Thank you so much for making time to come out. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Good to see both of you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Great to see you. Take care.
Thank you.
Coming back out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You know, given the time, I am going to forego my superintendent's report, which was going to be a long-range plan update and bringing some pieces together, which I'm going to go ahead and share the documents with you that I was going to talk with you, and then I think on the 24th I'll use my superintendent's report time to just verbally talk through the report. So I'm going to give you, just tell you what is on each of these pieces of paper. The first page is just a summary table of what we are currently involved in, and my intent next board meeting would be to walk you through some of those things. You can see the intersection of our activities, I think, as it relates particularly to the facilities work that you've been asking about and how it relates to other aspects of the long-range plan. So I'll walk you through that. The next page is just our transformative actions. If you haven't, I know you probably keep that wonderful white folder at your bedside so that you can read it over and over again. But in case you don't, the transformative actions are there. And then the third is really a summary of the think tank key ideas that we presented to you in the spring, so that they're, you know, an integral part of what I would be updating you on. And finally, is the timeline that we have put together for our work over the course of the next 2 years, in particular
this year, most detailed, and then till the end of the plan. So those are just documents for you. You've seen almost all of them before, except for the cover sheet, and I will talk more about that on the 24th.
Thank you, Ann. All right. Not to confuse the order of the meeting, but why don't we do board reports real quickly since we just did superintendent. Are there any board reports?
LLT, Learning Leadership Team, met last week. We recommitted to our, We agreed upon there's going to be learner characteristic posters in each of our buildings, and so we made some final revisions to those, and Julie has taken the lead, and thank you so much for doing that. There will be different ones that have in the elementary schools, and then we identified the next 10 learner characteristics that we're going to focus on for the first half of the year, and then we'll, the last 10, we'll do the second half of the year. And I just want to, the discussion on the learner characteristics at LLT has really progressed over the last year. From teachers like not having any idea what we were talking about, and to really, really owning them, and I mean, just talking about how the kids are owning it, and it's been a really nice transformation to see that it works. And I know we've got a lot of work to do on different projects, but we're going to be meeting with other groups, and so that's what we did at LLT.
Okay.
Did you say posters?
Yeah, so kind of, we have had, like, the character counts, so there will be posters in every one of our buildings. Again, the elementary buildings will be different, but and so they'll be hanging in the wall, in the building, and helping the kids, identify that these are the things that we focus on. And it's been interesting to see how, the learner characteristics, which were developed a while,
2007.
In 2007, so many of them are really 21st century things that we talk about, and all the different pieces that are coming out of Think Tank and with the core curriculum, we're seeing that these learner characteristics were always there, and it's watching the kids and the staff identify them. It was interesting. I mean, I don't know if anybody else had elementary open house last week, but even in the one classroom that I was in, talking about how they're using those with what it is that they were doing. So even identifying how some of these characteristics are. I've seen them, so we've worked on them. But even identifying how, like, now that we have science every day and how social studies is going is every day, and how we do it with the learner characteristics, it was refreshing to see. And it helps parents. And the other idea behind the posters was to have parents, any of our visitors in our buildings, when we talk, and I say we as a district community, is when we talk learner characteristics, we know what it means, but when our visitors, including parents, are in our buildings, they may not be as familiar with them. These posters help them identify immediately what it is that we talk about. And again, it was very refreshing to see how our staff embraced it, ran with it, and even listening to the kids, they can tell you their learner characteristic as they talk about something that they've done in class. So.
Steve, you can't see these, but there's a couple sample posters that Julie has designed, one elementary and one Hadley sample. Nicely done. With our trademark. What color is that?
Teal.
Sorry.
Teal.
Thank you, Julie. All right, yeah. Thank you very much, Tara. Okay. Anything else? Drew, do you have a quick finance update? We did today?
We met earlier today and went through the summer projects, the preferred and the alternates, and they're still in the preliminary stages, and the majority of the summer projects is focused on the reconfiguration of the Adley it's hard for me to call, not calling it a library, but the LLC. But more information will be forthcoming at the next finance meeting.
Very quickly, we've had an email kind of meeting of policy committee and are determining the section we're going to move on. So section 2, we decided? Was it 2, Sam?
No, section
3 and then 8 if we can get to it. Yeah.
No, we've done 7.
7, we did it, yeah. 8 if we can get to it. Anyway, more to follow. And I had asked Sam if he would be willing to take on the chair role, and so he was graciously accepted that. I thank you. He did. And so Sam will take over his chair this year, and I'll be continue to be on the committee, which I enjoy. So thank you, Sam.
And the next meeting is yet to be scheduled.
Yes, we're going to, yeah, that's passed to you. So thank you. All right.
I just want to, real quickly, I wanted to highlight that I don't think, make our community more aware that some of the shifts in the curriculum this year in the elementary buildings of where we will have in the elementary social studies and science on a daily basis. That's in all of our buildings, correct?
As we integrate.
Okay. Well, I mean, because, you know, again, even as a board member, it was something that I know you probably told us was going to happen. But as a parent, it kind of settled into my mind last week listening to a presentation going, oh, okay, we're finally back to science every day and social studies, you know, in our literacy block. So I just thought that was something I want people to know that we're doing, because if you're not in an elementary building, you don't mm-hmm. either, you don't know that we're back to that place. So
it's a good thing. Thank you. All right, that's it for board reports. So we are at our discussion item on superintendent search firms. And I want to kind of just, again, regroup and then pass the baton to Tira, who will facilitate. So on August 20th, we had a special board meeting. We have identified now 2 firms, Ray & Associates and Hazard, Young & Atea, which are the finalists for board selection. So tonight the request is, as was listed, as Ann had put in our Thursday letter, which I thank you, to bring to the table any new information that we have, and I really want to highlight that make sure that we stay focused on thoughts we've had in between, any changes to our ideas, any follow-up we've done in terms of references that we can share with the rest of the board, which will be helpful, and then go ahead and we will take action later. All right, so Tara.
Well, John and I went back to both firms. We sort of switched hats. I'll let John talk about Hazard. He was following up on the references. I know, Eric, I believe you did some of that as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And John and I did too.
Yeah, I think both firms provided a set of districts that weren't comparable to ours. I think we got 4 or 5 from Hazard, and maybe like 8 from Ray. They all seem to meet the criteria, at least the way I saw it. Ray's document was the district, and then the percentage of the demographics of the district, and then whether they were a high-performing district,
mm-hmm.
And I think the enrollments. And I think what Hazard did is they provided the district and then a reference to the district. So I think they both came through with quals that are similar to our district, unless somebody disagrees with that.
Some of the I had a conversation with Gary Ray to gather this information. I also made some attempts at trying to reference checking, and I mean, to be honest, it's sort of a hard. There was not anything one way or the other from any of the references that I had checked, and I can't speak for John. Some of the criteria, basically the criteria that we had used, You know, there were some references that did not, I don't want to say a failed search, but a search that did not produce any candidates from Ray and Associates, ones that, that no offer was made, no candidate was hired. And I know, in speaking, John and I talking a little bit about it, you know, it's the same thing with Hazard Young. Again, there were some searches that did not produce a candidate that people brought forward. Part of what I did, the way that I approached it, was trying to do, go back and look and talk to people that I knew. I mean, that's just how I function. I go to people that I know and just to try to get a sense of where we are. Again, in terms of, you know, learning new information, I think my sense has been, you know, most of the people that I spoke to have worked with Hazard Young before. I was unable to locate and speak with anybody who had actually worked with Ray and Associates. So that made it a little bit difficult. But
that's probably a factor of your neck, though, because you're here.
A little bit. I mean, Elgin is close, and they have, you know, so they had.
And you had followed up.
And
with
I had followed up with Dr. Torres, and so they had a failed search, and I'm going to say an unsuccessful a search that did not produce a candidate that was hired.
I did. That was the
right.
Elgin one.
Right, and you had the same with another...
Well, no, what I was going to say is I followed up a little more into the details of that search,
okay.
And my understanding was that was not, it's kind of comparing apples to oranges, because it was not a search in terms of what we're looking, in terms of the process we're going through. It was, hey, we need somebody, do you have any resumes? It wasn't a process of, you know, going through the community, gathering requirements. That whole process didn't happen. It was, we need candidates, we need them as soon as possible, can you give us some names?
Mm-hmm.
And then they actually had an internal candidate that was in that pool that they decided to go with, and the search was stopped. So, you know, when you told me that, I was concerned about it and made some calls and found out that was a more of a, you know, hey, you guys know people, you got resumes, can you send them over? Mm-hmm. That was my understanding. It was not the type of search we're looking to do here.
Mm-hmm.
I did a little Googling, and there was a district where Hazard had done the search and found a candidate, and I guess the vetting process was not, I guess, robust enough, and it turns out that there was an issue with the candidate, and the candidate had accepted the job, signed the contract, and then basically had to resign because of the issue. And that's not what bothered me, because we all have jobs, we all, you know, mess up here and there, every firm does, but what struck me was there's a line in the article about the guarantee, the 1-year guarantee, and so I made a few calls and said, well, you've got a guarantee, why didn't you use it? And the response was, we did not feel that we've got qualified candidates. So they went with another firm, which is actually another Illinois-based firm. So I mean, we're going to find that, I think, everywhere.
I think so, yeah. I mean, some of what I found, I think, tracks exactly in the same way. I had reached out to four folks, and two folks got back to me. Luckily, one for Hazard and one for Ray and Associates, which was good. So I was able to talk to Chris Kobe, who's the board president for Manuka. This was for Ray and Associates. They have 2,600 students. Their district is tiny. They have, or smaller than us, where they have a superintendent, two directors, and then a principal and two APs. So it's a little bit more streamlined in terms of their leadership. I can't remember if they said they had used Ray and Associates previously. I think he said they did, so this was a follow-up search for them, so they used them twice. And Dr. John Mink worked with them, and he was on that list of folks on our reference sheet. Felt the process was very effective. She described it is exactly as Gary Ray did when he was with us in terms of the outline, so it was very aligned with what he presented that night to us. Did a quote from Chris, Dr. Mink was great at guiding us through the process. and community relations. They have a position similar to Julie's. They call it community relations. Work hand in hand with them in terms of keeping the search organized. And one of the things that they presented to the board, which she said was critical for their board, was that they kind of hammered in on how this was a significant commitment by the entire board. And because of that, they felt they needed to be really confident in the search firm, which is not unlike what we're trying to do tonight, right, is to find that level of, you know, comfort. Their community felt their opinions were valid in terms of how they, you know, went forward and got that. And they were ultimately impressed with the candidates they brought forward. There were two candidates that Ray, she said, Ray and Associates brought forward, vetted, presented on paper, but the board didn't choose to interview them, so they ended up with, I think, two and then went with one. So in the end, felt like, you know, again, it was as advertised, I would say, and felt very good about, you know, that individual in particular. The other one was with Doug Flosky from Byron District 26. This board looked at both Hazard, Young & Tay and Ray & Associates, very similar to us, so they're kind of tracking with, you know, our conversation as well. This search was completed this last spring, so their new superintendent was in place starting this school year. For them, this was a challenging process, as he put it, because the former superintendent was let go by the board. So they were in a position with the community to have to really position this with some, you know, kind of different lens, I guess you would say. For Hazard, Young did an exceptional job, what they said was in three areas, or what Doug said. One, this board needed significant guidance because everybody on the board had turned over in 2 years and had 2 years or less tenure. And there was only one person on the board that had been through a superintendent search. So a young board from Doug's description, and he was one of those. The other one was that he felt that HYA provided good consulting, and I know we talked about that with both firms, specifically in the area of input from members of the community. How do you gauge appropriately? The community was very involved, you know, he felt that because of the you know, kind of ignorance of the board in terms of that process, they needed more of a consultative, you know, role, which they provided. And then the last one, the third area, is what they did for through on their commitment to do their homework, which is what we were just talking about with the vetting. And I think that's probably going to end up an issue for both, that, you know, there's might be a candidate that looks great, but it vets out, and or, you know, we know this now, so I know we're going to be, you know, very focused on that. You know, follow through on their commitment to do the homework, really understand the culture of the community, and Doug felt like did their homework before they came and really started to capture information. So, you know, whatever that means. They delivered what they presented in the interview process and then went beyond in terms of the advice and counsel. So that were the positives. They had used Ray & Associates in a previous search, so this was before this whole board's experience, so he couldn't really speak to that. He did call me back to let me know that the search that Ray & Associates did not produce a candidate, but he didn't, you know why. And he said there was a whole different board, so it was different issues, et cetera, et cetera. So, two that, you know, again, provide very similar information. And then the last thing I did, and this was just based on trying to get some information about Joanne, is that I did get a call back today from Mary Jane Brady, who is on the board, fifth year on the board with Lake Bluff, which is, that was the search they just talked about, right, that Joanne worked on. And she was very gracious and called me back and, you know, felt like Joanne did a nice job of conducting the searches the way she described it. I asked specifically, because we talked a little bit about this, about the issue of a site visit, because we vetted that a little bit and heard some similar comments. So this was her experience. She said that they made an offer to the superintendent that they ended up hiring and who accepted this new superintendent that they have. HYA recommended, because it was local, to do a site visit and to withhold the offer until the site visit was completed. And so that, she said, kind of, how did she put this? that sealed the deal to actually be on site. And so I asked her, you know, in terms of the site visit, what did that mean for you? And she said they asked the superintendent to bring together people that they could meet, and we're expecting, you know, 5 or 6 people, but she brought together, I think she said 15. And some who had worked very closely with her and who were very aligned with her, and others who she had had some, you know, good back and forth with, some good verbal spar, but could speak to some of how she handled that, et cetera. And so they felt that that was that final, you know, in some ways, interview. But that she was glad that Hay, Hazard, pushed that point, since they were close by and they could really, you know, close that up. So that was it. That was what I found about in terms of Joanne. So that's all the new stuff that I can add.
Sandy, do you have anything else you need to know that I know we talked a lot about it last time.
Yeah.
Does anybody have anything else that any other, I don't want to say research, but, you know, any other follow-up that they did from last meeting?
I mean, I did talk to their competition, and I wanted his read on these two firms, how they're...
Just to clarify, who's competition? So Hazard and Ray's competition?
Correct.
Okay. So another search firm.
Yeah. I wanted to see how they are viewed in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I got nothing but positive things.
About
both firms. There was not a one was better than the other. It was both of them were both professional and are, you know, very competent at what they do.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a little bit of the dilemma, because I know we all said this, you know, at the end of our last conversation, that really bottom line is we drive the search. It's our search as a board. Both organizations clearly are competent, have history, you know. So it's...
Yeah, I think if we look at they're both capable,
mm-hmm.
I sort of still go back to the criteria in terms of, you know, our criteria with the ability to search nationally, and I still feel the facts say that Ray had a bigger network,
mm-hmm.
more associates. It is their core business. I mean, that's all they do. Whereas Hazard is a part of Acro, which does a bunch of other consulting. That's, you know, not really relevant to what we're doing. I felt Ray has been along in the industry a lot longer. Hazard has been through some changes in leadership and changes in structure over the past, you know, 4 or 5 years. Ray's been, they've been doing it for 36 years. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt, you know, based on, you know, we're looking for the experience of the firm, looking for the experience of the recruiters. I think you guys all thought Mary was probably the best person that came through the door at that time. You know, last time we talked.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed with Mary. I think my comment was, out of the three representatives from Ray, I felt that she was the one that shone the most in terms of her, how she articulated her answers and that type of thing. I felt.
Yeah. I interpret your comment as the best person to come through for all the firms.
No, for that organization.
I think cost, we realize, is pretty neutral.
Mm-hmm.
I think their philosophy around the process of gaining requirements and community input, you know, they all had a process, they all had the K-8.
Right. And that's, I mean, again, that's everything we, you know, as you're saying, John, talked about previously. Steve, is there anything that you want to add? Anything new, different, research?
No, not really.
Okay. Anything from you guys down here?
Nothing new.
Okay. All right. So we will.
Do you want to take a straw poll? Because you're going to have a motion.
Mm-hmm.
And I would guess it should be for a firm, right. And it passes or doesn't pass. So I don't know if you want to do that based on a straw poll, or if you want to do that just taking one firm at a time. but you'll have to make a motion for a particular firm.
Because we'll be taking action after we return to open session.
You can take it now if you want.
Is that something we do now or something we do in closed session?
No, you can't do it in closed session.
I mean, if you want.
We'd have to do it after we return to open session. We could straw poll and then decide. Or we can have a straw poll now, let people see where we are, finish the rest of our meeting, go into closed session, then come back out.
That sounds good to me.
Okay. All right. So, Ray and Associates.
Thumbs up, thumbs,
thumbs
up.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. Okay.
Do we know Steve's thumbs up or down?
Oh, yeah, Steve, we can't see your thumb.
down.
Down.
Okay.
Okay, right. So, but it looks like you got a 4-3.
Yeah. My preference would be Hazard, but I'm comfortable with either. I think it's really important for us to drive the search, and
I'll come out.
Okay, good. Then we'll take action when we get back. Okay. All right. Okay, Steve. We'll take action when we get back.
What was the vote?
It was four in favor of Ray.
Ray, and three in preference for Hazard.
Right.
Hazard.
Steve, you, myself, and Erica preferred Hazard. The other four preferred
Ray. Okay. So when we come back, we'll go ahead and take that vote. All right. Upcoming meeting, September 24th, 2012, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. here at the Central Services Office. And then October 9th, a regular board meeting, 7:30, again here at Central Services Office. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board at this time? Okay, public participation. Anyone present who wants to address the board at this time? All right. We thank everybody for being here.
Linda, thank you for staying with us.
The board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters. Collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. The purchase or lease of real property for the use of the district, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired. The appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion. Second.
Roll call, please.
Yes.
Ms.
Miller?
Yes.
Mr.
Steiner?
Yes.
Mr. Gondra? Yes.
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 No. Yes. Thank you very much. Dean, thanks for coming. Good to see you. Okay, return to open session at 10:58 p.m. on September 10th. We have one action item, which is the superintendent search firm selection. May I have a motion to engage the firm of Ray & Associates to conduct the superintendent search for the District 41 superintendent as discussed earlier in the meeting by the board?
Motion.
Same.
Any further discussion?
It's not really a discussion. I just wanted to be clear that I didn't have anything new to add, and so I just fell back on my original assessment based on the interviews, and my original ranking was Ray, Hazard, and school exec.
Mm-hmm.
And even after meeting
Joanne
tonight, she's very impressive, and I will say that I think both Hazard and Ray are very impressive firms, and I do honestly believe that they would both do a similar job. I still have to fall back on my original assessment, which was Ray. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that, because when I didn't hear any other feedback, it did leave me some question about whether or not it was worthwhile for us to do any of the reference checking or anything, because that did take time. And so I appreciate your feedback, Sam. Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't have anything new to add. I mean, I think I said last time, they're both very close, but I fall back on, I don't want to see it as we're constantly sticking with the same firm, so I look at it as a new firm to bring into the fold as with experience with D41.
Okay. Anything else? All right, roll call.
I'm sorry. Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard? No. Mr. Vondrak?
No.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
And Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right, adjournment. May I have a motion to adjourn the the September 10th, 2012 Board of Education meeting?
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.